It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running for this final broadcast of the month of April 2018. It is the 30th day of April 2018. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where we live. That's where you go if you'd like to pick yourself out a screen name and a password and jump into the easy-to-negotiate Horn chat room, where you will be immediately greeted by the likes of Anatole and Foam Cups and Heather and BT Blom. And capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, has decided to show off his mickle powers and fold space to become Man Cave. Yes, he's there in both guises. And you will also, of course, be moderated by midweek pinch hit utility chat room moderator and all-around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. Yes. And Man Cave letting us know I can kind of walk again with a limp. Even spacing guild masters who can fold space, well, sometimes get a bum knee. Good to hear, Sparky. Good to hear. And we've also apparently folded temperatures, too, because it's a comfortable 75 degrees, Sparky says, in the Man Cave. And oddly enough, here in the fabulous Horn Studios at the fabulous Horn Mansion, it is also 75 degrees on this final day of April 2018. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Brother Deacon Asa lets me know that we are running hot and true on both streams, both the HeadOn.live stream and the stream from WhiteRoseSociety.org that goes out to places like Stitcher and TuneIn and Roku and what have you. That's great to know. The first thing we do with every program is thank our subscribers. And thanks go out this evening, being a Monday. They go out this evening to Harold, the president and CEO of Sochtris, the secret open carry Happy Trails Roundup Society. Thank you, Harold, and thank you also to Sharon. Thank you, Sharon, very kindly. And thanks as well for kicking in an extra $25 in honor of, how about that, the 25th anniversary of the nuptials of Agnes and me. Thanks go out to Randy in PA, as well as thanks go out to subscribers Charlene in Rhode Island. Thank you, Charlene, for all you do to keep us on the air. Thank you to our buddy Smitty in Florida. Thank you, Smitty. Thanks very kindly again to Randy in PA, and thanks to Philip in Texas. Thank you very, very kindly indeed. And so thanks also going out to Andy. Andy the Angry Jew in Illinois. Andy said, happy anniversary. Start with $25. Hopefully many more. We are both blessed, says Andy, with special women, so it seems. keep a good thought up this way, hoping for some good luck on the business end of my world. Obviously thinking of the horn. Not BS, not my shtick. Have a great day. And adds as a PS, hey man, your barbecue kills me. Absolutely gourmet, and I consider myself good, but crap. We'll have to share a slab someday. Indeed we will. Indeed. And that last comment stems from the fact that, it was kind of a anniversary thing. 25 years ago, the smoker was billowing, and there were shoulders and chickens going, and oh, it was some kind of special. And so I kind of wanted to replicate, you know, 25 years to 25 years, you know. And so there's and once again, I was necessitated to remove them just after sundown, and the moon had come up, and without me knowing it, Agnes snuck out behind me and took a sort of soft-focused photograph of me with my little head lantern on my head. Looks like I've got a death ray, and taking the shoulders off of the smoker with the moon shining down on God's yellow moon. Right, all of that. And I posted it over on Facebook. Shoulders, unlike ribs, are time-consuming. I mean, to really get it right, you got to have a couple of days run-up. There's the 24 hours in the brine, and there's the rub and the sit, and then finally they go on the smoker, and that's every bit of 12 hours. I do not look like a coal miner, Silent R. Lamar. I mean, thanks, I guess, but no, I do not look like a coal miner. My dad looked like a coal miner. My great-grandfather looked like a coal miner. I do not look like a coal miner. But, hence the photograph and the food porn. And it is good. I mean, whew. I pulled it off the smoker, wrapped it up tight, sat it in a cooler for about a half an hour. Something miraculous happens to a shoulder when it's wrapped up, or a brisket, and left in a dry cooler, wrapped up tight for about, 30 minutes or so, and then you just touch it, and it falls apart. And it is absolutely, oh, it's meat candy. It is meat candy. So we will have for our anniversary dinner what we had for our wedding dinner. Clever, no? No, but it's the thought that counts. Program announcement for this evening. The program tonight will only be 2 hours because I got a communique from the last low knee hills of the North Georgia mountains, and it turns out that our good friend Mike Malloy is still a mite groggy from surgery. After surgery like that, you know, sitting up in a chair and talking for two continuous hours is probably a little on the don't do that side of things. It's probably AMA, against medical advice. So yours truly will be in the unfoldable camping chair here in about 2 hours and 51 minutes, seated around the Truth Seeker campfire over at the Malloy place at Progressive Voices. So I hope you'll join me for that. Remember, when you're listening, when I fill in for Malloy, of course, there's obviously no access to video, but there's no access to video during this program either. I mean, let's see, right. So you got to listen via Progressive Voices. I keep the stream going here just for limited purposes, but if you're going to listen via Progressive Voices. Okay, because we'd like for progressive voices to have all the traffic. All the hits and impressions and those strangely wondrous internet measurement thingies that go on. Thanks for all the anniversary wishes in the chat room. Thank you. Thank you to all of you. Thank you very, very kindly indeed. Big good thoughts for you, Andy, up in Illinois. I'll be hoping them for you. No praying, though. I hope you understand. No praying. None. Don't do that. So that's... okay, I think that's pretty much all of the house. Well, Asa asked me in the chat room a few minutes ago if I was going to be live tomorrow. I have not made that call yet. I may not be on the air tomorrow. It depends on how the front end of the anniversary goes. We've decided we're going to jump out early and spend our anniversary. Okay, here's the lowdown. It had been my hope to actually not be here this week. I actually spent a considerable amount of time plotting it out and figuring figuring out how to go about it. And I was going to, because she's never been there, I'd planned to take Agnes to the Outer Banks. And it can be done relatively inexpensively. But I decided, well, I didn't decide, she decided, that it was best not done. Because there are reasons for us not to go away right now. That don't bear a lot of detail, but so tomorrow we decided, in conjunction with our ongoing commitment to getting to know the magnificence of nature hereabouts, that we would go on another nice hike. And because tomorrow is supposed to be tomorrow, if it plays out the way the weather forecast says. Tomorrow will be the most beautiful day of 2018 thus far, May the 1st, and if I'm completely just drained and worn out by the time we get back through the door, there will be no program tomorrow here. Or there's a possibility, because she's been known to do this, that Agnes will look at me and go, get to work. Which, at that point in time, I will then do. I'm sorry, I can't be more definite. It's as close as I can get. And at the end, when all is said and done, I don't like to not be here either. So... that's all I can say about that. Okay, then. At 15 minutes, or, well, 14 minutes past the hour, we should probably take note of the fact that today is, what today is.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land, morons.
Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. You will not believe your ears. It's Moran Monday on the Horn. Here, behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas reside
all manner of morans under the sun. Birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, birchers, baggers, booger eaters, libertarians, trumpansies, maggots, Republicans all. The entire sickening panoply of right-wing, white-wing hypocrisy, homicidal mania, and everything in between. Yes, indeed, yes, indeed. For less than the cost of half of a crummy little McDonald's hamburger per three-hour program, you get access to all the morans here. You can't tell the morans without a program, and this is the program that tells the morans. You just can't tell them much. Oh, no. Oh, no. Like I said, that less than the cost of half of a crummy little McDonald's hamburger gets you more than anything else you'll find down the Carnival Midway, whether it's shooting crooked-barreled guns at targets you can't put out or hopelessly tossing ping-pong balls at goldfish bowls in the vain hope of winning a little iguana that will eventually get big enough to eat you once you get it home. There's no bargain like the Moran Monday tent. Here, behind the sign, just before the sign, somewhere near the sign that says this way to the egress. A warning to people entering the Moran Monday tent. Keep a close hand on that iguana. Small other small animals, children, purses, backpacks, European-style messenger bags, as the morans can get grabby. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in morans. And yes, you will indeed. Oh, my goodness gracious. We do have morans to take into consideration today. We do. Where to begin? Let's start, perhaps, let's begin with the judiciary, shall we? Yes. Just because people have black robes and sit in jury boxes does not mean that the concept of moran it cannot be applied to them as well. Mm-hmm. What am I talking about? We go to Austin, Texas, where Judge Brad Urrutia added a 6 months jail time maximum and 100 hours of community service and $11,000 in restitution and a portable alcohol monitoring device requirement for at least a year to the 10 years probation. Not 10 years jail, not 10 years hard time, not 10 years jail time, commitment to the custody of the Commissioner or Department of Corrections or any of that. No, 10 years probation upon a conviction of negligent homicide for accidentally beating his neighbor to death. Yep. Why? Well, he utilized, James Miller did, the gay panic defense. He claimed that Daniel Spencer, who was gay, came on to James Miller, an older man, and instead of saying, no thank you, He stabbed him to death.
Mm-hmm.
And the jury heard the gay panic defense and said, well, I guess. And instead of convicting him of murder, as they should have, the jury convicted him of negligent homicide. No, really, really. The morons on the jury convicted,
it was self-defense because he was going to make a homosexual of me.
The prosecutor, Matthew Foy, says the verdict establishes that Daniel Spencer was a victim of a senseless killing by the defendant, and he did not do anything to bring this upon himself. Since the defense's strategy was to argue self-defense, I think the jury's verdict makes it clear they did not believe it was self-defense. Now, meanwhile, the blood evidence did not support Miller's story of the decedent Daniel Spencer having come on to him. Not even. But, yeah, 10 years probation for a murder and a gay panic defense. Like I said, just because. I mean, they didn't want him going to Huntsville and getting the chair for just, you know, killing a gay guy, right? Right. Morans? let's check in with. Speaking of being convicted of things and not doing real time for it, how about Don Blankenship? Don Blankenship, you know, a week from tomorrow, we'll find out how effective his campaign for the Republican nomination for Senate from the state of West Virginia. We'll find out how well that's gone. You might recall he was convicted of a misdemeanor for evading coal mine safety rules that resulted in the incineration of 29 miners past being recognizably human. You might also recall that in the same trial, he was charged with a felony, the felony being ripping off shareholders on Wall Street, because that's a felony. But doing things that lead to the incineration of 29 working people, that's a misdemeanor, according to the federal government. Yes. That's a standalone moron. But he's been working the ridiculous side of the street lately. And, among other things, compared himself to Nelson Mandela. Yeah. Yeah, he's the total moron package. He blamed Barack Obama for having him convicted using his secret Kenyan Muslim usurper powers to mind control, using the, you know, that sort of Jedi mind trick on the jurors who heard the evidence and convicted him of the misdemeanor. Yeah, and CNN asked him, well, you know, there may be some West Virginians out there who think you have blood on your hands. To which Don Blankenship, moron, responded,
well, the thing I would say to them is Upper Big Branch deadly explosion is one of the biggest reasons they should vote for me if they have family members or involved in the coal industry.
Really? Really, Don? Mighty nice family you got there. It'd be a shame if anything happened to them in the coal mines. Vote Don Blankenship? Well, okay.
Mm-hmm. Unlike any other person that I know of, I stood up against the establishment when they falsely claimed that the explosion was caused by the coal miners. Dirty, damn tree huggers blaming the coal miners. I don't know of anybody who blamed the coal miners. I mean, like in zero. Now, Blankenship blames the Mine Safety and Health Administration and, of course, you know, the Kenyan Muslim usurper with his Jedi mind trick Kenyan Muslim usurper powers. And he blames old Hillary Clinton, former EPA Administrator Gina McCarthy, everybody but Don Blankenship, tree huggers. I was done railroaded by the government. I loved them miners. I love the smell of incinerated miner in the morning. It smells like victory. Yeah, right. Morans. And, okay, so, from there, it's not a big, far trip over to, Loudoun County, Virginia. Remember Chris Cantwell, the crying Nazi? Well, he was found, about a month ago. Story just broke a few days back. About a month ago, he was found sort of wandering around Loudoun County, Virginia. Out on $25,000 bond and couldn't leave the Commonwealth of old Virginia. He's on $25,000 bond pending charges of malicious involvement in the Unite the Right rally, you know, where the Nazis became homicidal and carried tiki torches and machine guns and whatnot. Well, semi-automatic assault rifles, otherwise Dana Lush and Greg Stinkfield and Cole Leon Noir and Ted Nugent and Wayne the Peter will have a sad, not machine guns, semi-automatic assault rifles. Right, yeah, poor baby, snowflakes. But upon coming into contact with Chris Cantwell, a Leesburg, Virginia police officer observed signs of intoxication and smelled a strong odor of alcohol on or about the subject of the person of the body of a particular individual, namely Chris Cantwell. So he's been in the cooler, pending getting one of those blow and go constant alcohol monitoring devices, like Mr. Miller down in Austin is going to have. Yeah. Nice guy, Chris Cantwell. Morans, you know. So we've got that. We've actually got a lot of vats. Blankenship that I mentioned just a minute ago. He's very mad at Chinless Mitch McConnell
Because McConnell doesn't want him in the United States Senate and doesn't want him winning the West Virginia primary. He is, as the saying goes, meddling. The Republican Senatorial Campaign Committee is meddling in the rights of the people of West Virginia to choose whomever they want as their nominee. And Don Blankenship, convict, misdemeanor convict, but convict, doesn't like that worth a damn. And on top of it's not just that he doesn't like Mitch McConnell. He apparently doesn't like Mitch McConnell's wife, Transportation Secretary and former Secretary of Labor, Elaine Chao. And this is layered. This is layered Moranity. It's a little, bear with me. So you've all heard me talk about our governor here, Jim Justice, who for all of his adult life was a Republican, a billionaire, biggest corn farmer east of the Mississippi, owns all kinds of coal mines that he won't pay the taxes on, that sort of thing. But for most of his adult life, he was a Republican. And his mama, I guess, and his daddy, Republicans. Rich people tend to be Republicans. It's okay. And, shortly before he decided to run for governor of West Virginia, yea, verily, with a hallelujah chorus of angels appearing above his head, Jim Justice became a Democrat, so he could run as a Democrat for governor and have a chance of winning. And he won. And then it was a real big deal when he turned around after Geezer Disgustus won the presidency. He turned around and went back to being a Republican. And all the simpletons in the media said, "Oh my God, he's changed parties." Not, "Oh my God, he's changed parties," back to what he's been all along. "Oh my God, he's changed parties." And, well, see, simpletons. So Jim Justice has a history of, among other things, being ethnically insensitive. We all know by now, at least those of us who, we few, we happy few, the Horn Family Community Congregation, knows about the Kunta Kinte story. "Sometimes I go to sleep and I pray to God and I say, 'God, how come you done made me Jim Justice and made me so rich like this to be Jim Justice?' And God says, 'Jim Justice, I made you Jim Justice and not Kunta Kinte, so you could be a rich man and do good things for lots of people.'" You know, I should have known that something was up way back several years ago when Jerry West, he's the logo. He's the NBA logo. I mean, a fantastic basketball player. Came out of Cabin Creek, more or less, West Virginia. Had a stellar college and NBA career, played in the 1960 Rome Olympics, that kind of thing. I should have known something was up when he kept touting Jim Justice as the best feller to come along since Jesus H. Christ. And I did. I kind of wondered about that. The autobiography, moreover, was an interesting read. But that was the Jim Justice remarks were kind of a clinker. Then we figured out why. So there's the Kunta Kinte story, and then later on, in discussing whether or not some of the tax monies from fracking maybe taxes might be raised on the frackers so that teachers could get a pay raise that they deserved and we could pump money into the school system that is badly and desperately needed, Jim Justice responded, There's not a Chinaman's chance. And then quickly retreated, saying, "Well, I didn't know saying that wasn't something you wasn't supposed to say. Shucks."
And so then Chinaman becomes a dog whistle in West Virginia. And so, lo and behold, Don Blankenship shows up on a radio program here in West Virginia that shall remain nameless, and said that by way of hitting back at Mitch McConnell, said that McConnell has a conflict of interest because he's married to Elaine Chao, and Elaine Chao's daddy is, quote, a wealthy China person. And maybe that's why McConnell is soft on China. There's a lot of connections to some of the brass, if you will, in China.
This would be a lovely time to point out that Don Blankenship is squarely in the hands of the goddess of irony, because Blankenship's own spouse, Farrah Mei Ling Hobbs, was born in China. And in the past, he has said things like, "Now listen, you're going to need coal unless you want everybody living like they do, nine families to one single apartment like they do in China."
But Chinaman is now a dog whistle for the most rabid and virulent white wingers in this state. Because here in Merca, well, no, here in West Virginia at least, we're going backwards
and not forwards.
Nah, see, I'm not sure about that. Ron in Raleigh says, "So Zeke from Cabin Creek is a filthy right winger? Well, dip me in shit and call me smelly."
Okay, you get it. Yeah.
I don't know that he is. I don't know that he is, but he's got a little cabin. Let's call it a cabin, down at the Greenbrier, which Jim Justice owns. And if you've got a little cabin down at the Greenbrier, you might get to hobnob around with Jim Justice. Jim Justice, of course, being very proud of the fact that he's a high school girls' basketball coach.
Big sportsman, Jim Justice.
So, yeah, I know. Now, I don't know about you, but I did take time last night to tune into the premiere of this season of Anthony Bourdain's Parts Unknown over on CNN. I've always enjoyed his work, and last night I had a vested interest in tuning in because, well, doggone it, the season opened with his episode about West Virginia. And this isn't so much a Moran nomination, but I feel a need to sort of correct the record a little bit. If you happened to watch that episode, you would think that West Virginians pray louder and more often than your most devout religious fundamentalist of some other faith that is often put upon in this country. I mean, to have watched that last night, you'd think that hillbillies pray 12 times a day and not five. They were praying on the bus. They were prayed over all. You know what? I've got a fair number of friends around here, and I don't know too many of them that pray over the meal at all. But I guess that was part of the narrative of the program.
that West Virginians have a deep and abiding faith, and the outline on it, the line on the way out the door was, well, if you can't if you can't at least identify with some of these values, there's no hope for any of us. The only problem was that as for it being a news magazine program about West Virginia, well, it wasn't. It was mostly a program about McDowell County and the local environs. They did go off the beaten path a little bit. They talked a little bit about Hawk Knob Cidery, and they that comes out of Greenbrier County, which is not McDowell County. And they didn't wear out, and I was surprised because it's an issue that's apparently near and dear to Bourdain's heart. They didn't go just hog wild on the opioid crisis, but my goodness gracious, he went and shot real live, honest to goodness, fully automatic machine guns at human targets. I don't mean human shaped targets, like mannequin type targets. That was a little disturbing. And then they shot pumpkins full of explosives. We've talked about Tannerite here on the program, and they made great big explosions. Boom. And he went down and ate bear meat for lunch down in a coal mine, because that happens a lot around here. You know, you're on your way to work, you're on the day shift, and you just stop and blow away a bear and field dress it and cut it up and take it back and have the little woman cook up a big aluminum foil pan full of bar meat, and you go and have it in your lunch bucket down in the coal mines, but before you eat your bar meat, you pray over it. I wish I was kidding. I wasn't. One of the things that most people do not know about West Virginia is that we are a distinctly varied state. The West Virginia of, say, Monongalia County, where resides my alma mater, Harvard on the Mon, West Virginia University, or Berkeley County, wherein, not Beckley, Berkeley, gets confusing, wherein you will find Berkeley Springs and Charlestown, not Charleston. Well, those two, the difference between there and McDowell County are night and day. And they got, you know, they got no play in that episode. And neither did the extremely different culture of, say, Harrison County, where there's a strong Italian heritage, Marion County, where the same applies. Marion County is more or less where the pepperoni roll was perfected, if not invented. That little magnificent, it's our statewide snack. But you got to go to the Cloverleaf Bakery in Marion County to get the real deal, because they don't use those puny little slices of pepperoni. They cut it into nice, thick, chewy strips and bake it in. Most any pepperoni roll you're going to get in West Virginia is going to be done with sliced pepperoni. It's not the same. And Wood County, Parkersburg, And so it was mostly, you know, people with guns in the woods, or people with guns shooting at targets. And I give Bourdain and his crew props for going out of their way to show that, that West Virginia is not a monochromatic state. They showed homecoming football game footage of young black men escorting young white women at Mountain View High School's homecoming to-do. And, like I said, that had value. On the other hand, they shot a lot of footage at Mountain View High School and apparently never once told Bourdain or his crew that they and the children who go to school there every day are in perilous proximity to a toxic waste site. If you get on something like Google Earth and you type in Mountain View High School, Welch, W-E-L-C-H, WV, it'll zoom in, and if you keep the north-south orientation, if you look immediately to the right of Mountain View High School, you will see what passes for a reclaimed mountaintop removal operation. You know how you can tell it's a reclaimed mountaintop removal operation? Because no trees will grow on it. Ever. At all. I mean, maybe you can get a sapling to 7 or 10 years old, but you're, as Judy Bonds once famously said, I can grow an oak tree in a bucket for 7 years. But when you try to stick them in the ground on one of those sites, guess what? They die. Because they could sink a taproot a half mile deep and never touch water. The water table is completely ruined. And what water isn't ruined is poisoned. Hey, bonus. But they didn't, you know, they didn't, and it's the same place, incidentally. It's the same school where Bernie Sanders had his town hall a year ago last March. I went there for it. And they didn't tell Chris Hayes or the production staff or Bernie that they were within breathing distance of a toxic waste site. You see, the coal industry around here, and even people, don't like it when you call a mountaintop removal site a toxic waste site, when in fact it is. They all are. It's not like there's fairy dust and unicorn pee coming out of the drainages of those buried streams. When you blow up 800 feet of a mountain and unleash a couple of hundred million years of accumulated biosegregated toxins, good things don't happen. And the school itself is part of that mountaintop removal complex. But no, they didn't mention any of that, because maybe that's just not something that... Can't imagine how that's not relevant. And, you know, more praying and more guns. And the other thing that was absent was, now they did, there was a lot of talk with
Let's see, there was a constitutional conservative, and there were some hard-working coal miners who talked about why they voted for Trump. And yeah, I'm mocking them. I live here, baby. I can do it.
But, yes, in November 2016, West Virginia was the Trumpiest place on earth. We have since lost our pride of place, if you can call it pride of place. We've since lost out to, well, Talabama. And still, though, Trump got 68% of the vote, won every county in West Virginia. But that still leaves 32%, almost fully one-third of the state of West Virginia's voters who voted, did not vote for Trump. Two-thirds, one-third? Yeah, it's a pretty big split. But as we've seen, one-third on a national basis, 33% of the voters, that's Trump's base, and that's enough to screw up an entire country. But while there were plenty of scenes in which somebody, well, you know, I decided to vote for him quick as Hillary came here and said she was going to put all the miners out of work. Now, okay, this isn't the Hillary defense hour, but she didn't say that. That's what a campaign ad run by an obscure candidate in an obscure race that was supposed to be nonpartisan for the Supreme Court of the state of West Virginia, said she said. This might be a good time for a refresher course that what Hillary had actually said was that there is a new renewable, sustainable energy infrastructure coming, and that means, and blast her hide for not having, for her terrible, terrible, terrible penchant for saying the wrong thing at the wrong time. And so we're going to be putting a lot of coal miners out of work, but we're going to have to take care of those people. Yeah, we got those peopled. And so what she was actually saying was she cares about the people of Appalachia and that she wants to make sure that Appalachia doesn't get left behind in the coming sustainable, renewable energy transformation. But that's not what Cletus down in the mine eating his bar meat heard. He heard what the political ads said. And he wasn't quite curious enough to go and find out if that's what actually got said, because it conformed with his biases. It conformed with 8 years of Republican messaging in Appalachia about the Obama EPA Kenyan Muslim you slurper war on coal, or they can blow up miners and blame poor men like Nelson Mandela, like Don Blankenship, for doing it. Yeah. And so, you know, they like I said, they got around to some scenes where there was it made West Virginia look like a pretty nice place to be. Folks sitting down and eating artisanal greens and vegan, cruelty-free, soy-free, gluten-free, free-range, GMO-free squirrel and froggy legs and things like that. But nobody asked them at that table and drinking cider from the aforementioned Hawk Knob Cidery in Greenbrier County. And they in particular, they make a cider that is infused, and they make mead, too. But they make a cider that's infused with locally collected, grows wild elderberries. And it is fan-freaking-tastic. And so they're all sitting out there outside, and they're eating and a snacking and everything. And I guess we were just supposed to assume that these were the smart non-coal West Virginians who didn't vote for Trump. But we had to assume, because nobody was asked why they didn't vote for, you know, maybe they thought that they were protecting people. Because not being a Trump fan is not going to win you any new friends to this day in this state. So maybe that was it. But that's the best I got. But there's fantastic stuff going on all around the state of West Virginia. It really is. We're in tourist season now, and the little tourism industry places have begun ramping up. And, you know, the local vibrancy is on display. After about Memorial Day, at the end of next month, the end of May, it'll go absolutely hog wild. And there'll be almost as many or more out-of-state plates around here as there are in-state. So that's, I mentioned all of that because I've been asked a couple of times today in various fora what I thought of it, and you know, there was I think there might have been 13 seconds mention of mountaintop removal, so hey, at least it got in there. But the problem with mountaintop removal is that even when you hear about it, you don't necessarily know what it is, and even if you're told what it is, you can still get it wrong. There's a Rolling Stone piece that I read earlier today where apparently the guy thinks that the blasting dust gets in the cricks and the creeks and the streams, and that it's the blasting dust in the streams that poison people, when it's the stuff that gets breathed that does all the damage. But apparently it's bad water causing the birth defect. Oh, my God. The article's just a mess. Hung Like Jesus says, can you give me a quick rundown of mountaintop removal? I could Google it, but I'd much rather hear you. This shouldn't take long. After all, I've spent more time on air talking about mountaintop removal than any other person on planet Earth. But coal companies, instead of going underground, it's not worth it to them to go underground for a seam that's 6 inches thick. So instead, they cut down all the trees, they pile them in one place, they pour diesel fuel all over them, and set these, you know, trees on fire. Just burn it up. There's no value to them. And then they take massive amounts of high explosives, like, you know, one charge on one mountaintop removal site can be the same as 26 Tomahawk cruise missiles landing at one time, and they blow up all the rock that's above the coal seam, and they scrape it away, and often they dump it over into a holler next to the hill and bury the little creeks that run through the hollers and supply the streams that eventually supply the Great Kanawha, that supplies the Ohio, etc. You know the rest. And other streams as well. And then they scrape off the 6-inch seam of coal. And then they drill more holes and they blow up more explosives. And it takes about 5 years for about 10 guys to take down 5,000 acres. And along the way, with the dust from the blasting, they poison anybody who lives anywhere near these sites. And yes, they impact the streams, and selenium runoff affects the little things that live in the streams. Nothing can live on a mountaintop removal site. You can't do anything with one. You can't put a wind turbine on it. You can't grow anything on it. I wouldn't eat anything that was grown on it. And so they've done that to the tune of about 500 mountains. Delaware is not a huge state, but it is kind of shocking to realize that the area of land that has been ruined for the next million years or so is equal to a state the size of Delaware and growing. So that's mountaintop removal in a nutshell. We have more morans. Oh, yes, we do. In my father's mansion are many morans. Let's see. Sinaldar Lamar is looking on Google Earth. So if you find Mountain View High School, look immediately to the right. And the high school will be kind of tiny, and the mountaintop removal former site will be huge, and it's got these sort of stair-stepped attempts at maintaining drainage, and it's all covered in non-native grasses, but, you know, the absence of trees is kind of a giveaway. Yeah. So, Randy wants to know, how'd they get away with putting reclamation ads on TV for so long? Well, it's not like there's any truth in advertising laws. Hell, they had animated bugs as spokespeople for the coal industry for a while. Animated bugs with, not real bugs, of course, bugs can't talk, but animated bugs with southern accents. Mm-hmm. No shit. They're supposed to reclaim, hung like Jesus, they're supposed to reclaim the sites. But less than 3% of all mountaintop removal sites have ever been reclaimed within the meaning of the Surface Mine Reclamation Act, SMACRA. Surface Mine Control and Reclamation Act. So there's that. All right, then. We'll take a break. See if you've got anything. You got any more ants you want to nominate? Because you're welcome to. Oh, yeah. Yeah, Larry says, just curious, you familiar where ex-NBA player White Chocolate Jason Williams and NFL second greatest wide receiver Randy Moss grew up there in West Virginia? Yes, absolutely, absolutely. DuPont Bell area. And that's not too awfully far. It's basically just across the river from where Jerry West grew up. Randy Moss was born at Rand, West Virginia, and that's, yeah, same neck of the woods, really, right there along the banks of the Great Kanawha River. Anyway, if you've got any more ends to nominate, you're more than welcome to. I welcome you to. The phone number, 304-574-8178. Toll free, 844-843-4676. That's 844-THE-HORN. And then, from Skype to Skype, anywhere on the planet, Bob Kincaid Horn. Oh, yeah, Brother Deacon Asa remembers. Yep, the animated bugs literally said they moved to the hollers as soon as they had heard there was coal mining going on. Not kidding. No. And then we just come right back. We did. Mercy sakes. Oh, it was, and it was bugs testifying in a courtroom, no less. Yeah. I wish I was kidding.
Oh, and thanks to Glenn for jumping in with the anniversary celebrations. Thank you very kindly. I'm not fundraising tonight, but thank you for the kind gift. Thank you. That's true. Silent R. Lamar says, you can take the boy out of the woods, but you can't take the woods out of the boy. I'd like to, I mean, that's why we'll probably be doing a little woods wandering tomorrow. We'll get there. We'll get there hung like Jesus. Just be patient. Trust me. And so, yeah, let's take a quick break. Got a bumper in from Ron in Raleigh. Did you get, Agnes, that photo of Lone Ranger, of the Lone Ranger's horse? No? Oh, well, I can't say I didn't try. The bumper, says Ron, is what Agnes said to you before y'all got married. It's More on Monday on the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Keep your hands to yourself. Your hands to yourself.
Nine and a half minutes past the hour on this Moran Monday. Many, many Morans yet to come. It's just a sad note. You've heard a lot from Jim, our buddy Jim, over the years. And if you've been listening lately, you know that
You know that his dear four-footed friend Rufus has not been doing well. Well, Rufus passed on this afternoon. Jim says, and when he dies, let us cut him out into little stars and make the face of heaven so fine that all the world will fall in love with night and pay no homage to the garish sun. I rescued him, says Jim, and he rescued me. See you soon, little buddy. Go forth and be happy, Rufus, in a place where all the mice are slow and you are lightning quick. So, what else? Well, plenty. I briefly mentioned it. I can't remember if it was on the Malloy program or on this one. But a new memorial has opened up in Montgomery, Alabama. The memorial is not the nomination for this Moran Monday. It is a national memorial to the victims of lynching. And the memorial points out why people of color were lynched, primarily in the South. Pretexts like standing around, or annoying white girls, or not stepping off the sidewalk, or looking white people in the eye, or not referring to a police officer as Mr. All these things are, and many more stories, are on open and horrifying display at the lynching memorial in Montgomery, Alabama. The lynching memorial is about a mile away. And I should note that the lynching memorial is not subsidized or supported or in any way provided by the taxpayers of the state of Alabama. On the other hand, and hence the nomination, about a mile away from the lynching memorial, the state of Alabama and the taxpayers thereof do subsidize and maintain the first White House of the Confederacy. Memorialized there is what is referred to as the life of renowned American patriot Jefferson Davis. That Jefferson Davis. The one who committed treason against the United States of, well, America. And some of the white folks down that way, some of the white folks in Alabama, there are less than thrilled to have the lynching memorial. Never protested or marched up and down the sidewalk in front of the first White House of the Confederacy, mind you, but people like Mickey Keenan, 58 years old, longtime resident of Montgomery, when interviewed by The Guardian, said, "It's going to cause an uproar and open old wounds. It's a waste of money, a waste of space, and it's bringing up bullshit." No, really. Mickey was having lunch at a country-style southern restaurant, as Sam Levin writes for The Guardian. Mickey was having lunch with a friend of hers. Her friend would not give her name to Sam Levin, the Guardian reporter, because she was afraid that her offspring would hear and be ashamed of Mama. Because Mama said, it keeps putting the, talking about the lynching memorial, mind you, not the first White House of the Confederacy. It keeps putting the emphasis on discrimination and cruelty. One gets the idea that she would probably get along famously with a fellow from Louisiana. What's his name? Robertson, one of the Duck Doofus Robertsons, who said a few years back that he resented the fact that all these people all the time talking about how unhappy the slaves were. There's a lot of them was real happy to be out there chopping cotton and sugar cane. Mm-hmm. A lot of folks showed up over the last week or so to celebrate the opening of the lynching memorial. Desperately needed. Thousands of tourists and progressive activists went to the city for the opening, which of course served as an economic boost to an area that could certainly use one. Meanwhile, they're in Talabama, the conservative Southerners, said that the opening of the lynching memorial made them more worried about the need to save our Confederate monuments that the left-wing activists is trying to take away our history. Kay Ivey, who became governor of Alabama when Robert Bentley had to resign the office because he'd been caught violating the vows of his traditional family values marriage because he was a deacon in the Baptist church. She didn't even so much as show up for the opening of the memorial. I mean, she's a Republican. That wouldn't sit well with her base. And she didn't issue a statement lauding the preservation of a brutal part of our history. No. On the other hand, however, a week before the memorial opened, she put out a video. A week before the opening of the memorial. Kay Ivey put out a video, was real proud of it. Uh-huh.
Up in Washington, they always know better. Politically correct nonsense, I say. When special interests wanted to tear down our historical monuments, I said no and signed a law to protect them. We can't change or erase our history, but here in Alabama, we know something Washington doesn't. To get where we are going means understanding where we've been.
Alabama is working again.
She put out a video lauding the fact that she had signed a bill preserving monuments to Confederate treason. Uh-huh. But was nowhere to be found when it came to the lynching memorial. Of course, the experts on whether or not we need a lynching memorial in the United States, and particularly in Alabama, the experts on that are, by definition, all white. One fella, Randall Huey owns a radio station, and he said,
Well, they have every right to have the memorial, if it's accurate. That seems... 4,000 lynchings? That seems pretty incredible to me that there would be that many documented lynchings. That was not the norm, said Randall Huey, who, I might note, is not 158 years old. Mary Massey, she was on her way to lunch in Montgomery when she stopped and spoke to Sam Levin. She said, we didn't have nothing to do with that. Just leave it alone. It's just stirring up something. Mary's husband, Jim, on the other hand, Jim said, it's gone, and it won't happen again. Let sleeping dogs lay. Completely oblivious to the fact that he had just referred to murdered human beings as dogs. On the other hand, people who visited the memorial understand completely why it was necessary. Brittany Willie is 19 years old. She comes from Huntsville, Alabama. And she found an engraving at the memorial of the name of one of her ancestors murdered. She said, for so long, society's put a shadow over these things. People are going to see this and realize these people were innocent. They were killed for who they are. 40-year-old Victoria Dunn came to the memorial. She said, this is something our children need to know so they can understand the struggle. This is going to be something embraced by everybody. You know, especially if, like, the business community can figure out a way to have a... lynching memorial mattress sale, or, hey, there's a lot going on down here to Fred Thumbbutt Chevrolet. It's our lynching memorial weekend. They gotta go Chevrolet sale. Yes, sir. Come on down on the way to the memorial. Pick yourself up and see the memorial the American way in a Chevrolet. Yeah. But the idea that the state of Alabama can pay for a memorial to treason, several of them, as a matter of fact, and maintain them. But this is the trouble spot. Steel slabs hang from the roof of the memorial with the names of the murdered. And outside on the grounds are brutally depicted, because it was a brutal process, brutally depicted sculptures of human beings being sold at the slave market. Yet meanwhile, Tommy Rhodes, a member of the Alabama Sons of Confederate Veterans, which would make him 130? No? Said, bring that stuff to light and let it be there, but don't dwell on it. We've moved past it. You don't want to entice them and feed any fuel to the far. Them. Wonder who the them is he's worrying about being enticed. I don't think he's worried about enticing the Klan to do more lynching. No. On the other hand, as far as the
the first White House of the Confederacy Memorial is concerned. The man who is the curator, I guess you would say, of the Jefferson Davis Memorial, Bob Weiland. Well, he said that Confederate landmarks have to be preserved because Montgomery's changing from a sleepy old cotton south falls away. Keeping this museum just to have a positive taste, an old South taste as the new sun comes up. Yeah, positive taste there at the first White House of the Confederacy. A place that's stained with filthy treason. Because, see, there's really no mention of slavery at the museum of the first White House of the Confederacy. I mean, like, none at all. And he said, well, here at the White House of the Confederacy, we could certainly tone down the celebration of Jefferson Davis, but it is part of Civil War history. And well, we don't talk a lot about slavery because, it's a more of a political military history than a social history. Oh, okay, so the Southern military was not at all helped along by the use of slave labor. Got it. That was all just... And, of course, then there's the fact that the first White House of the Confederacy, well, I'm guessing that hard-working, genteel white fellas didn't exactly, lay the bricks and the mortar and mix up the whitewash and the plaster and build that building. Or dig its foundations, or any of that. Nope. We don't have so much social history. That's social history. That's slavery. That's social history, not military history. Even though the hundreds of thousands of freed slaves who joined the Union Army and helped kick Southern ass. Were definitely part of military history. But it prefer not to talk about that sort of thing down here. Yeah. I know. Hung like Jesus is. Sounds like guilt to me. That museum may be like a huge mirror to some. And that may be why they don't want to look in it. James in Illinois says, subject line lynching. It was all Democrats doing it, just saying it. They do that all too well. Renee in D.C. says, forget whoever feels less than thrilled. I'm mortified. My dad told me his father's brother, my great uncle, was lynched. I don't know why, but I'm certain it was for no good reason. Well, none of them were. Yeah, that works too, Arthur. Arthur asks, you mean Sons of American Traitors? That would be the ones. Mm-hmm. So we've got Ron just sent along a link. New York Times covers lynching of blacks, conveniently omits the whites that did it. Oh, dear.
It comes from a website called yourblackworld.net. New York Times covers lynching of blacks, conveniently omits that whites did it. Victor Oching says, a good example of this is the New York Times coverage of lynching in America, confronting the legacy of racial terror, a report that detailed the lynching of African Americans between 1877 and 1950. The outlet paints a grave picture of the lynchings, but intentionally avoids mentioning the people behind the atrocities. Is it the fear of describing whites in a bad light? Is it a concerted effort to represent whites as innocent? A reputable publication like New York Times is expected to provide balanced coverage of the report to maintain their credibility. Or did they think that readers wouldn't notice? Even that possibility would smack of racism. Probably we'll be talking a little more about the New York Times during the Malloy program. And by the way, Ron sent along condolences to Jim. He said, give Jim my sincerest condolences. My four-footed companions went to their long home some years ago, and I still miss them. Thank you, Ron. That's very kind of you. Let's run over and check in with Todd. Hey, Todd. Sup?
Yo, I see you're talking about some strange fruit this evening.
Yeah, I couldn't let that one get past Moran Monday, especially about the part where it seems pretty incredible to me that there would be that many documented lynchings. That was not the norm, because that's a Goddess of Irony moment. You know, they wasn't supposed to know.
You know, last time we talked, that's exactly why I think maybe the first thing I said was, remember Woodrow Wilson.
Yeah.
And the reason I brought that up is because something we talked about last October, you know, we were talking about, well, you know what, if this fascist gets in, hate crimes are going to go up. I mean, that was predictable. And of course, you know, they did. So, yeah, it's pretty damn sad, honestly. It's really, and you know, I don't know why people let this Charlottesville, that was Virginia, right?
Yeah, that's Virginia.
Yeah, I mean, to let that incident, I mean, when we had people marching around saying blood and soil, that's a really big deal. Out in public like that, like in a broad daylight, like really, really. I think that should, I've been thinking about this, and I think that really the local people, it was their responsibility. It happened in their jurisdiction. They really should have had like a day of atonement, you know, reflection, and say, hey, you know, what are we doing that this is here? You know, why are they here? Because to ignore that means you're complicit in a way. You know, but I'm kind of getting off on a tangent, but that was shocking to me. But, you know, it's crazy.
I have a feeling, just based on the way that it is described, the lynching memorial would probably have an emotional heft to it similar to going through the Holocaust memorial in D.C.,
I think a lot of people, I don't know if I heard you talk
and
about
if I get
before,
if I get down that way, I'll stop. Attention must be paid.
Yeah. I mean, this was it. I had people in my family, obviously, who were lynched, but not only lynched, but, you know, if they didn't lynch you, they ran you out of town on the rail. In other words, they would, like, tell you, well, you can get on this train, or, you know what happens. You know what the or is.
Well, yeah.
So, it's just, and it's funny you bringing this up now, the day that Kelly is in the news, you know, calling Trump an idiot, and he, you know, and he's got his own baggage. That he's talking about, well, the Civil War was just a lack of compromise. You know, what are you supposed to?
Yeah, I can't. No, I just can't.
Yeah, and I'm not going to repeat what I called him one time because it was pretty crude. But I mean, you know, that's what he acts like. So, you know. So anyway, happy anniversary and all good things.
I appreciate it.
What more is going on with this museum?
Well, I mean, they had their opening, and, you know, the Guardian at least sent someone there to cover it. And it's Montgomery, so if you just dangle the microphone long enough, someone will walk up and say something stupid and racist into it. Can't be helped.
Huh.
And I give it, I don't know what kind of security they've got there, but I expect it to be spray painted with some interesting words any, you know, just any day.
Really?
Sure. I hope they've got a sandblasting budget. Like I mean, and just as two examples, Booker T. Washington was born about the same place, Randy, in the same community Randy Moss was. I was talking about Rand. And for a while there, they had a bronze memorial up to him, a portrait bust. And they had a real problem with people coming along and spray painting that ever so vulgar word on it. So it got moved to the Capitol because it couldn't be there to mark, you know, the town where he was born. And then the Big Bend Tunnel was a real, you know, the story of John Henry.
Right.
Steel-driving man.
Right, right.
Well, he wasn't white, folks. And so they put up a memorial to him at the Big Bend Tunnel, which is also in West Virginia.
Uh-huh.
And it got defaced the same way. And I think they had to put up like a big old fence so tall that Klansmen couldn't climb it or something to protect it. Then in a little old tiny community not too awful far from where I grew up, is there was a memorial to the birthplace of a brilliant and talented and brave man by the name of Jesse Owens. And it was way off the beaten path. You had to want to go there to see it. And it got tagged that way, too. So I see no reason, unless there's like, and frankly, even if there is an absolute boatload of security cameras, that will not stop a dumbass from going and trying to deface the memorial.
I've not been to Montgomery, but I mean, it just seems like after all the history and all that's happened, you would think that maybe, I mean, it's a, you know, it's, what is it, a medium-sized city, that you would think that folks would be a little more evolved. But you know Alabama much, you know.
No.
You used to live there.
No.
Okay.
No.
So you say no.
It's also the state capital of Alabama, so that means it's absolutely overrun with good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual, Christian Republicans. And those are the people who are more eat up by their offended sense of saintliness than anybody else.
Oh, that's a whole other show. God, you could do a good show. I am so pissed off with Paul Ryan. What the fuck is his problem? The chaplain, he's just too Christian?
No, that didn't have anything to do with it. Paul Ryan fired him because, Paul Ryan didn't want anybody to know he fired him, first of all. Damn it. That wasn't supposed to come out. Sorry, I don't know why I'd fall down into that accent. But they weren't supposed to find that part out, but, you know, when he got pressed on it, he said,
"Well, no, other members of the House were coming to me and telling me that the guy wasn't able to appropriately minister to them because he couldn't talk to them about the problems they'd have with the little woman back home." No shit. Because, you know, them priests can't get married. And, you know, I've had people come to me and say to me, "Paul, the next chaplain needs to be a married man who can understand our married man problems."
You know what? There are two fundamental truths that have to be told and have to be accepted for our country to move forward. The first one is that the Confederate relatives, the folks who believe in the South, you know, that kind of thing, you know, they have to come to grips that their relatives were wrong.
The South will rise again.
Yeah, and it's painful. I mean, I wouldn't give a fuck. I mean, like that's like saying your grandfather, you know, was a murderer. Like, well, it wasn't me. You know, that was him. But they're wrapped up in that shit. But they have to get beyond that. And the other thing is that these evangelicals need to come to grips with the fact that they are really not Christians. They're really not. It's a cult. It is not what Christianity is supposed to be about at all. And it's causing a whole lot of trouble.
Well, I thought I was guessing maybe, since you are among our principal Washington Journal observers.
Mm-hmm.
I thought you might have something for us on Howard from Pennsylvania, who called in to Pedro this morning.
I did hear Howard. I didn't want to say his name. Yeah, there were a couple people today. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Howard was deeply aggrieved, and he was, of course, calling in on the Republican line. And I'll probably go into this over on the Malloy program. He was aggrieved over the White House Correspondents Association dinner. And Michelle Wolf. And he didn't like the fact that, to use that phrase that our Australian friends use, she took the piss out of a whole bunch of Republicans and Democrats too. I thought the best zinger of the night really was when she said, "Don't you find it a little bit odd?" I'm not direct quoting, but isn't it a little bit strange that the Trump campaign was in contact with the Russians when the Clinton campaign wasn't even in contact with Michigan?
That was beautiful.
I laughed out. Agnes and I were watching, and I mean, we both hooted like barn owls.
She had some really good jokes.
And what made it Seagal darn funny was the fact that it was Seagal darn true.
That's what makes it funny.
But Howard from Pennsylvania was right worked up. Shall we clue in the Horn Family Community Congregation to Howard there?
Please.
And I got to tell you, I realize we're talking about video on a radio program, but my God, the look on Pedro's face is just beautiful.
I mean, I haven't seen it because usually I listen, but
he looks like Howard's about to give him an aneurysm.
Well, you know, Pedro, I know what he looks like when people shock him because he gets these wrinkles on his forehead and his eyes buck up.
Oh no, his eyebrow you can't tell which part of it. You can't tell if that's his eyebrows or the curve of his glasses. And that's not a critique of Pedro. That's a that's the look. I don't care where you work, what you do, that's the look of. There's got to be something else I can do for a living. Maybe I could play the bongos in a whorehouse. There's got to be something else.
Yo, you know what's interesting? If you notice, they have an interesting shift because they'll do a few days and they have to have a few days off because it's just too stressful. I mean, it's can you imagine doing that, being that type of jockey? Because once in a while you hear somebody has a really good comment and they make all the sense in the world. And, you know, most of the time it's these zany people, you know.
All jacked up on that second bottle of Ensure in the morning.
That's what I was about. Oh, man. No, I swear to God, man.
Can I have a cowbell for that? I'm down to asking for them now, Todd. Can I have a cowbell for that?
Yes.
Thank you. All jacked up on that second bottle of Ensure. Yes.
Nope, they mixed it with Old Panther, though.
Oh, you get one too.
I mean, I'm telling you, this is like this is a sickness. Like, so I go back and forth depending on, you know, I don't know what, you know, whatever she's doing. It depends what I can do, but I like to go back and forth between the Morning Joe and Washington Journal because, I mean, honest to God, like that, what, a couple few weeks ago, that the woman who called in. And she apparently, her daughter had children from different men of different ethnicities. And then, you remember that one? She was calling the Mexican kid a beaner.
Yeah.
I mean, honest to God, some of these things are classic. It's addictive.
If you worked for them, you would. You'd write it into your contract. Okay, I do this for four. I do this for 5 days. And then I get to go somewhere and just set up a tequila drip for the next four.
That's the only way. And Pedro is like, he's like, what? And actually, I've gotten in twice. You know, I've talked with Pedro, I think Brett and Pedro, but yeah, and he, you know, I was talking about, it was about police violence, but, you know, he questioned me a couple times. But that's a tough job. That's a tough job. But, yeah, Howard, man, Howard this morning. Oh, my God. And then I don't know if there's a gentleman that calls in from Georgia, and, I mean, he is the biggest Trump supporter, this guy. I don't know if he's a farmer. I know he does something with stocks.
Do the voice, Todd. Do the thing.
I'm in stock, goddammit. I love Donald Trump. He's the best thing ever in America. And I'm telling you right now, optimism is baiting. Georgia, I want you to come down to Georgia, Pedro. We got something for you.
That's good.
Now, you come down. I'm telling you right now, we got that snow, dude.
How can you have spent an entire a lifetime around Philly and you got that down so good?
Grits, man. I'm telling you right now, you think them yellow grits.
it's in the grits.
I'm told you, Bob, I don't see him walking around town. He gets a heart cut. He walk around like one of them goddamn hippies.
that ain't no fair.
It ain't no fair. That'll earn you.
I'll learn them. Blast some sense into them.
Oh, shit. Now, how the hell what you say, you got one of them briskets? How did that shit turn out, Bob?
No, them's butts. Them's butts.
Them butts?
Yeah. I tell you what, you touch it with a fork and it fall apart like a house of cards.
Mmm. Oh man, like where it just cleaves.
Oh, it don't want nothing to do with the bone.
Damn, that's beautiful.
And it's just moist and whoo.
Your acorn is looking good, by the way. I have to say, man, you keep that thing immaculate.
It does it itself. When you pull everything off, as long as it's not going to rain or anything. If you just open those dampers up and let the coals just, you know, get up to a billion degrees, and then when it cools down, you just go in with I learned my lesson about those like brass bristle brushes. Say that three times fast. Because, like, they'll fall, and they'll get in them, and then they wind up, like, you know, up in your gums and stuff. It's terrifying.
Oh, oh.
So I got a nylon one that, you know, and you only use it on cold metal, but just, and it's brand new. And just spray it, you know, spray it with the canola oil spray, because we all know that there's such a thing as a canola.
Right.
Got her a bloomin' canola for our anniversary. Right.
No, you know, you read my mind with the spray, because I have really stopped using, I don't know, for whatever reason, you know, not like Pam, but now they have, you can get olive oil and canola in the can. And for certain applications, like for to keep your grill from rusting, it's wonderful. Oh, my God.
Yeah, but, you know, I saw that Weber has a spray now for your grill, but it's got hickory flavor built into it. And I'm like, what the actual?
I don't see the point in that.
Well, I'm going to have some real live, honest to God hickory flavor. I don't need any artificial in a can, thank you.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, no, we don't need that. It's just, no. Mm-mm. No. Of wood, it's going to be in there. You got chunks. My God, come on.
Yeah, oh, by the way, these were done with a combination of hickory, pecan, and cherry.
Oh, shit. Damn, man. Any left?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's tomorrow's dinner. It's anniversary dinner.
Oh, I see. Okay, that makes sense.
Got the hot slaw going. See, when you got the hot slaw, you don't have to use barbecue sauce.
Okay.
Because you got your tangy and your sweet and your mustard. And your spice, and all with the crispy crunch of the carrots and the cabbage.
I bet to ask you, because your ribs look so TV perfect, and I'm really not saying that to blow your ego up. I mean, seriously, they look perfect. But so, what type of sauce do you like on your ribs?
If I'm cheating and I'm not making my own,
mm-hmm.
My absolute favorite comes out of North Carolina, and it's called George's.
Mm-hmm.
And it's real, real thin, and it's real long on the vinegar, and real short on the sweet. And if you can get mm-hmm. the spicy, you're all the way home. And so what?
No shit.
Yeah. So what I do is, I mean, if the ribs, you know, generally I don't even fool with it. If folks want it, they can have it. But I'll wait till the very end, you know, you get them out of the rib rack, put the rib rack aside, get the heat real low, lay them down flat, and just mop them, and close, you know, 10 minutes, mop them again, close, and about three good moppings, and you're done.
Yeah, well, we're veterans. We learned the hard way that
oh, I've ruined some serious barbecue.
You don't put the sauce on. I still met some people, man. They put my neighbors do not know how to cook. I'm telling you, across the street.
We won't tell.
No, see, I laugh every time. Number one, they'll put the charcoal on the grill, they'll put the fluid on, light it, and put the meat on while it's still smelling like fluid. Number one.
Well, number one, don't use that shit. Number two, don't use those briquettes.
Well, that's what they do.
Two handy little things. I mean, I like my chimney and everything, but if I want to just build it inside the kettle of the acorn,
mm-hmm.
Weber makes some paraffin cubes.
Mm-hmm.
And then I found something of similar variety made with wood shavings called haystacks.
Mm-hmm.
And you put down a layer of charcoal, you lay these things in where you can get at it with a lighter. And then you put more charcoal on top. You light them. They light instantly. There's no, and they burn hot and big. And they'll have your charcoal going righteous in no time flat.
Yeah, that's.
I love those things. They're handy as hell.
Yeah. Because I'm not a big fan of that at all. Because that taste, ugh. And just the chemicals. Nah, I'm trying to get away from that.
And the charcoal and the charcoal that I've fallen in love with is called B&B. 100% all natural lump charcoal from hickory. And I mean, it doesn't look like just, you know, old pieces of pallet that have been thrown in a kiln.
Mm-hmm.
This thing, this stuff, I mean, it's branches and limbs and, you know, hunks of log. And it's serious, yeah. Hey, let's let people hear Howard real quick, though.
Yeah. You got Howard queued up.
I got Howard.
Yeah, do that, please.
And their parents.
Okay, let's go to Howard in Big Run, Pennsylvania, Republican line.
Good morning. I'd like to comment on Michelle Wolf. I think she's ignorant, and I don't think C-SPAN should carry that kind of stuff.
What, as far as what she said, what makes her ignorant in your mind?
Well, the tampons and all this and that, you claim to be a family program. Now, I watch a lot of C-SPAN.
You claim to be a family program, and then you're saying the tampon word. I was up with my children watching that ignorant woman at 11 o'clock at night, and my three-year-old said, Daddy, what's a tampon? Grandpa, what's a tampon?
But there's more. There's more.
Man, every morning, I watched back during the inauguration, you had the two white entertainers, and how they cussed, and you had a black man up on the soapbox, how he cussed. And when
we don't need any cussing black men on the TV C-SPAN. Damn it.
Person calls in and mentions what...
Well, caller, just to let you know, what? I mean, regardless of inauguration, regardless of correspondence dinners, we air these things in total. That's part of our mission. So I know that some of the content, you know, to some may be offensive or undesirable, but that's the way we do things. So,
why do you cut off the caller when they mention fellatio and you say this is a program?
Well, you just said it, and I didn't cut you off. So let's go to Carol.
But now I am.
Oh, God. Every time I hear that, I don't know if it's me. I'm telling you, man.
There's nothing funny about a tampon, damn it.
What fucking child is listening to goddamn Washington Journal?
Trying to teach the little ones about some civics here, Pedro, and you got people talking about tampons at near midnight Saturday.
And I thought that was a funny-ass joke, by the way. That shit was funny. She was raunchy, but, you know, come on. All right, so this critique, and that's what people have been talking about. And you know, I was like, wow, she's really pushing it. But that's the whole point. That's what comedians do. But you know, I don't know who I heard say it. But it hit me the right way, because after I thought about it, I was like, wow. But look at the president. Because think about this. This is the president. What do you say to your children? You want to grow up to be like Donald Trump? Grab pussy? You want to be like Donald Trump and defraud people?
Well, you know, wait. Time out. Okay, so that just raises a question.
Uh-oh.
The last time we heard vulgarity like that, Donald Trump was talking to Billy Bush on the Access Hollywood bus and talking about, you know, grabbing women by, you know, you can do that. Oh, I better get a Tic Tac in case I have to kiss her. You know, sometimes I just do. I walk right up and kiss them and grab them by the, Jesus. And back then, the Republicans said, you know, that was just locker room talk is all that was in public on a bus. That's all that was locker room. But Michelle Wolf, oh, no, that's not locker room talk. That's lock her up talk. Yeah.
Bob, you really framed an interesting argument, because the mentally ill fascist, what he was admitting to was felonious behavior.
Assault.
That's felonious behavior. Yeah. It's not a joke.
No.
Okay, this woman Wolf, these are words. It's a joke. You know, he has set the parameters now. You know, come on.
these motherfuckers have got to stop. They have to just say, look, all right, this is out of control. This is just ridiculous. We cannot put up with this shit anymore. Because how the fuck can you say, who would trust their child with, around him? Oh, and by the way, we haven't talked. I guess I talked to you last Monday or something like that. He fucking, listen, his mental illness is spilling out now.
Out of hand.
Oh, God. Thursday, when he called in to Fox and Friends, that motherfucker, what is the fuck is his problem?
Where do we begin? Yeah, being raised by Fred and Mary for starts, but, you know.
Well, he has just, oh, God, the way I see it, he has really just talked himself into a pickle. I mean, obstruction is obvious. That's the low-hanging fruit. There's nothing strange about that. You know, it's there. I mean, that's easy pickings as far as I see it. I'm not, of course, I'm not an attorney, but damn. I mean, he admitted it. He's admitted it twice. And he's got a pattern of obstruction. And the way I hear the legal pundits say it, the hard part about proving obstruction is you have to show intent, the frame of mind.
Right.
And he's admitted that twice in front of millions of people. Am I wrong?
No, you're not.
I'm just like, when is this train going to stop?
When somebody makes it stop.
I mean, this shit is not funny now. I mean, it stopped being funny like 8 months ago, seriously. But with that call Thursday, I mean, he is unwrapped.
But I don't know if you caught this. Now it may become a thing.
I did hear that.
He may do that once a month.
Well, this raises a lot of questions in my mind, because we have a president. I remember this vividly. He said, someone asked him, "So where do you get your advice about, you know, foreign affairs and domestic issues?" Well, you know, I like to watch the people on TV, and I have a good brain. That was in close proximity. And he wasn't fucking kidding. What he told us the truth. He watches Fox News, and so we got, like, somebody, these people hyped up on Alex Jones and Fox News, and they're in the White House.
And they get a couple of Ensure Metamucil cocktails in them, and they become unmanageable. But you're right. All kidding aside, it's frightening. And you know, the last thing to add into the mix, because I got to go now, because I got to do Malloy do the Malloy program tonight. But the last thing to add into the mix is, Bibi Netanyahu hauling out his, you know, Acme. I don't know if he brought his Acme bomb, Wile E. Coyote bomb picture with him today, He addressed the Israeli people this evening and said that he had discovered a secret Iranian plot to build nuclear weapons. You know, says the guy whose itsy-bitsy, teeny-tiny, little, not-as-big-as-New-Jersey country is bristling with them, but they won't tell, as Ron and Raleigh mentioned in a note to me, but they won't tell the rest of the world how many they got. Or who they're aiming at. But see, he's... Bibi is a straight up... And, you know, you can criticize Bibi, and you can criticize the excessively right-wing, verging on total fascism government of Israel. And that, you know, that's not saying... I mean, that's just a criticism of a government. No different than criticizing, say, the government of Brazil or the Democratic Republic of the Congo. okay? Or India or China. It's a criticism of a government. And the government they have wants to get down and wallow with Donald Trump. So, you know, Trump wants to get out of the Iran agreement. Macron made it clear that he, Angela Merkel, you know, not interested in getting out of the agreement. He talked to Rouhani in Iran. Rouhani said, no, we're not going to renegotiate the agreement. The agreement's the agreement, which he's got a right to say. And so Netanyahu turns around and says, all right, well, we'll see if we can't gin up a little bit of war so that we'll piss the Iranians right off and we can finally get World War III going real good. I don't know, maybe Bibi really does secretly wonder if there's any truth in that business about Jesus coming down out of the clouds. I got nothing. But
no,
he's trying to set up some sort of game whereby he makes it safe for Dolt 45 to saber rattle against the Iranian people.
That Likud party, they think this is the guy. They can make their move when Trump is in power with this administration. They think this is their time. That's what you're saying, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I see that also. And right, because I mean, everything's all fractured. I mean, John Bolton, they're all on board with that. They're all those dominionist type people. I mean, they're just chock full of them now. You know, it's really messed up.
And it is pure 200 proof madness, Todd, madness. I think of the Soviet ambassador in Dr. Strangelove saying, "The fools, the mad fools."
Huh? I'm surprised you didn't have it queued up, Bob.
I probably should. If I was better, I would have. But I got to get out of here because it's reboot time. Good talking with you, Todd. You have yourself a good evening.
You too, man. Take care.
All right, will do. Later, man. See ya.
All right.
Our buddy Todd down in South Carolina, Stan, always brings his A game. Meanwhile, Brother Deacon Asa says, goddamn Bob Kincaid done been paid by the Iranian regime to shill for him. Sadly, no, the check ain't cleared. But, you know, oh well. Don't reckon it will either. I'm just, you know, something about free milk and a cow. Oh, and by the way, thanks to everybody for the kind wishes. Rhonda in Virginia with kind thoughts to Jim on Rufus. So sorry for his losses, says Rhonda in Virginia. He says, you know, my pets are my life. And thanks to Kitty in Boston. And to everyone else who has sent along kind thoughts for Jim. It is time to get out of here. I overran a little bit, but I got to get everything turned around and rebooted and everything for the Molloy program coming your way at 9 o'clock. I hope you'll be there, and I hope you'll be listening on Progressive Voices. Thanks to everybody who makes the program happen. Thank you so kindly for the anniversary gifts to Randy and Andy and Glenn, thank you very much. Thank you ever so kindly to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this little program. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thanks, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and always, 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 Gina It's all for you. Later, y'all.